Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. So in this story, you've probably noticed there are a few different tension points. These places of, I guess, growing conflict. And I think as we read through this, one of the things that we are supposed to be doing is trying to figure out who is making the right choices. One of those tension points is between Menildur and Aldarion. It's a typical situation where you have a father and a son, and the son wants to make his own decisions, and the father believes he knows better. He's wiser. He's older. But then you add on the responsibilities of being the rulers or the future ruler of Numenor, and their responsibilities to their people, and their place in the world with the Valar, and it adds some extra complications. It appears that Menildur is trying to do what all of the kings before him did as well, and he's trying to prepare Aldarion to rule. He needs to take a wife. He needs to stay at home in order to do that. And so we're posed with this question: what is Aldarion out there doing? Is he being selfish? Or is there some sort of greater reason for him to keep leaving? Something that is actually to the benefit of Numenor itself, and he just won't tell his father or us. We also have the conflict in Aldarion himself, I guess you could say. It's not a conflict between Aldarion and Arrendis. They get along well. She shows up. He's happy for her presence, but he also knows that he can't settle down because he loves the sea, and whatever else is out there that he is doing will always be something that will divide him between staying and going. And he knows that's difficult for a potential mate. So it's an internal conflict in himself between those two things. And the tensions continue to grow. Where we left off last time, he brings back a diamond for Arrendis. And I don't think that this is just something that Tolkien picked out of a bag of things. Oh, it could have been a gem of some sort, or any sort of gem, or maybe gold, or a pretty necklace, or who knows. No, the point of this is that it was a diamond. It is a very rare, very expensive type of gem, but it also holds with it the symbolism of a proposal for marriage. And yet that is not what Aldarion does here. He presents it as a gift, alone, with no greater meaning, no request for a hand in marriage. And this is where we pick up the story today, because this does not sit well with King Menildur. So at Aldarion's return, we find out that cold now were the greetings between the king and his son. And Menildur rebuked him, saying that such a gift was unbecoming of the king's heir unless it was a betrothal gift. And he demanded that Aldarion declare his mind. Basically, he's going, you are presenting this giant diamond to a woman who you know is hoping for your hand in marriage. You realize what this symbolizes. You need to declare your mind. You need to state whether this has meaning or it flat out doesn't. But it seems like it probably does. Otherwise, why would you bring back this gift? In my mind, that's the perspective here for Meneldir. And Eldarion responds, in gratitude, I brought it, he says. For a warm heart amidst the coldness of others. And I love when Tolkien takes these lines of text and kind of turns them against the person that they're saying. It's almost like it's very similar to the banter that you get in like Game of Thrones, for example, if you watched the series or if you read through those books, where every kind of thing they say is a little bit backhanded. And so he's basically saying here that his father is being cold. But then we get Meneldir's response. Cold hearts may not kindle others to give them warmth at their goings and comings, said Meneldir. And he again urged Eldarion to take thought of marriage, though he did not speak of Arrendis specifically in this instance. But Eldarion was done. He didn't want to argue about this anymore. And maybe Meneldir's words here sunk in, because we're told that he treats Arrendis now with greater coolness and decides to leave Numenor again to further his designs in Vinya Londe. Vinya Londe, you might be wondering, some of these names come up. If you look on the map of Middle Earth, the version that we are familiar with from The Lord of the Rings, it's very similar in the Second Age, except that there's a Numenor out in the ocean. But if you look at a map, you'll see the Shire up in the northwest. And if you follow south to the coast of Eriador, then you get this coastline. And the coastline goes from the northwest and it heads southeast. And it's those areas along the coast where he's been visiting. And there are specific areas, the openings of the mouths of some of the rivers that run down into the ocean that he is visiting specifically. So Eldarion decides he's going to leave again. And we're given a little bit of insight into his mental state here. It says life on land was irksome for him, for aboard his ship, he was subject to no other will. And the venturers who accompanied him knew only love and admiration for their great captain. He's getting used to being in a situation where nobody can tell him no. It's the George Lucas problem, basically. When he's on land, he has to deal with his father, he has to deal with the court, other people, but when he's on his ship, he is the sole lord and king, for lack of other words, out in the ocean. But that's not how it is at home. And Meneldir realizes that he's planning to leave again, and he flat out this time forbades him to leave. But Eldarion, quote, before winter was fully gone, set sail with a fleet of 7 ships and the greater part of the venturers in defiance of the king. He flat out says, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to go where I want. And there's another character amidst all of this. There's the queen, who has been quietly working in the background to set him up with a wife, to try to help out the king's plans, I guess you could say. But she's also looking out for her son. She knows that he needs to take a wife, similar to the king, but she isn't the type that is going to flat out argue with him. She's the type who's going to work things in the background and do things in her own way, even if that might make Meneldir upset. We're told here that the queen did not dare incur Meneldir's wrath, but at night, a cloaked woman came to the haven bearing a bough, and she gave it into the hands of Eldarion, saying, this comes from the Lady of the Westlands, which is what they were calling Arrendis, and went away into the dark. The queen is still working to set them up. But this time, Eldarion's leaving and going against the will of the king was too much. The king considers this rebellion. He rescinds the authority that Eldarion has as Lord of the Ships and Havens of Numenor. He causes the Guildhouse of the Venturers to be shut and the shipyards of Romenna to be closed. Plus, he forbids the felling of all trees for shipbuilding specifically. This is after he leaves. 5 years go by and Eldarion returns with 9 ships. He left with 7. They built 2 in Vinyalonde. And this is an update on what that must be like over there. There's plenty of trees in Middle Earth, but now their shipyards are fully functional and they are building ships to the same quality that they build them in Numenor. And on these ships, they bring back with them timber from the forests so that they may again build more ships if they need. And then we learn that Eldarion did not know about how his father responded to his leaving. It says here, the anger of Eldarion was great when he found out what had been done. And to his father, he said, if I am to have no welcome in Numenor and no work for my hands to do, and if my ships may not be repaired in its havens, then I will go again and soon, for the winds have been rough and I need refitment. Has not a king's son ought to do but study women's faces to find a wife? The work of forestry I took up, and I have been prudent in it. There will be more timber in Numenor ere my day's end than there is under your scepter. So there's a few things going on here, and I think the first is the most interesting. Obviously, he's upset. He's saying, well, if he's not welcome here, he's gonna leave. But then we get this line, for the winds have been rough. We've been told previously that the sailors and the ships who leave from Numenor, the Numenorians, are under the guidance and protection of the Valar and the Maiar. But yet, he's experiencing rough winds. Winds rough enough to require updates and fixes to some of his ships. This is the first time we've ever been noted about this. Something is changing fundamentally between Eldarion and his connection to the Valar. And he also responds about being able to take a wife and taking up forestry. Basically, he's like, hey, I've got this. I know what I'm doing. Let me do what I need to do. And he leaves again, this time with 3 ships and the hardiest venturers he can find. And without blessing or bow. This will be the first time he leaves without either of those. And the reason for this is that Menelder, the king, set a ban on all women of his house and of the venturers, and he put a guard on Romenna. Basically, he made it impossible for Arrendis or anyone else to show up and bless the voyage. And this time, Eldarion was gone for a long time. 10 years. So long that it says here that people feared for him. Menelder himself was disquieted, despite the grace of the Valar that had ever protected the ships of Numenor. He himself, Menelder, the king of Numenor, wasn't sure if his son was alive or dead, and if he was alive, if he was ever going to return. And Menelder wasn't the only one who had these questions in his mind. Eldarion was gone for so long that Arrendis had the same thoughts. Believing that Eldarion had met with disaster, or else he had determined to dwell in Middle-earth, and also in order to escape the importuning of suitors, she asked the queen's leave. And departing from Armenelos, she returned to her own kindred in the Westlands. She was sure that enough time had gone by, that she was being forgotten. And she takes leave of being one of the ladies of the queen. This is a big decision. That is a high honor. And she decides there's nothing left for her there. So she goes home. 4 more years go by and Aldarion's ship finally returns to Numenor. And the ships of his party, and they are all battered and broken by the sea. We're told that he had first sailed to the haven of Vinyalonde, and thence he had made a great coastwise journey southwards, far beyond any place reached by the ships of Numenor. But returning southwards, he had met contrary winds and great storms, and scarce escaping shipwrecks in the Harad, found Vinyalonde overthrown by great seas and plundered by hostile men. This has another set of things that are very interesting to look at in the description here. First of all, as he travels southward, he's met by storms and winds that are contrary, that are against his travel, that do not help him proceed, because these are sailing ships. They need the winds to continue moving in a direction, and when the winds blow against them, it makes it very difficult to continue in that direction. This doesn't seem like an accident. This seems like something very intentional. Ulmo, Ose, somebody out there, some powerful force is standing against him. He escapes the shipwrecks, but he returns finally to Vinyalonde, and he finds out that it's been overthrown. This settlement that they created, that they were making ships at, was overthrown by two things. Plundered by hostile men, so some force of men from somewhere come in and take over, but also overthrown by great seas. Were these hostile men against the Valar, or were they in league with them? Because hostile seas helping overthrow your seaside fort would again be something that was controlled by powers beyond men and elves. And returning home was very difficult for him. It says three times he was driven back from the crossing of the Great Sea by high winds out of the west, and his own ship was struck by lightning and dismasted. The lightning blew apart the main mast on the ship, and only with labor and hardship in the deep waters did he come at last to haven in Numenor. There are great forces that are working directly against Aldarion. And we'll find out what happens next after we take a quick break. So let me tell you a little story. You know that we get sponsors on these podcasts, and Eufy, who does these smart locks with video cameras in them, reached out and they sent me a smart door lock with a 2K camera, a doorbell, and a finger reader, all the bells and whistles. And I was like, okay, cool. They sent it to me. I already have one on my back door. When I opened this up and installed it, I was like, why didn't I go with Eufy to begin with? Because this is a step above the one that I've been using. The finger reader just works. The 2K camera is so clear. I can see when somebody's at the front door, if it's Amazon or if it's somebody trying to sell me something. It even has night vision and works in the dark. It makes me feel so much safer. Plus, my son can just put his finger on the door and just come right in when he gets home from school. He doesn't have to worry about losing keys, and you don't even have to change the batteries in these because it's got like 10,000 milliwatt hour battery that lasts for like 4 months. Go check these out today. Search for Eufy Video Lock, that's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/video lock to see how you can gain complete control of your door. Again, search Eufy Video Lock. I think you'll love it.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All All right, welcome to the middle of the show. Thank you for being here. I'm sorry I missed last week. It's the first week I've missed, I believe, since like October. But yeah, I described it on the Patreon. So if you're a patron, you probably saw the note about this. And also, thank you for all the kind messages. Last week was very difficult for me. I suffer migraines, and I happen to have like four in the span of 7 days. It was rough. My brain wasn't working great. It was very difficult for me to put together an episode last week. So I decided to take the week off, and I'm so happy to be back. This last week has been much better, not suffering in the same way I did the previous week. Things have been working out a lot better. So thank you for your kind words and for your patience. I always feel bad when I have to miss a week, but I do what I can, and I'm glad to be back. Also, we have to welcome our newest patrons, Quen Z and the Waffle 110 or 110. Welcome to the Patreon. I'm so glad that you are here. I hope you are enjoying the things that you get on the Patreon, like bonus episodes. There's a ton of bonus episodes. There's almost a bonus episode for every regular episode. So if you're looking to basically double the content that you can listen to, go check out the Patreon. There's lots of cool stuff there. Also, there's t-shirts and other things too. So it's fun. Go check it out. Patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. Also, we have to shout out our VIP patrons. Here we go. I'll get through it as fast as I possibly can. It goes like this. AK Music Lover, Anakin Skywalker, Apollo, Aragorn III, Austin C, Azzle Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Black Squirrel, Brandy D, Cutter Metalworks, David S, David M, Divine Madman, Drupal, Esoteric Rage, Fulcrum, Gimli A Break, Gemma D, Jesse P, J Eggs, Jezzer, Kate L, Katie S, Capenna, Lore FC, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Michael M, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Peace Lutheran Church, Richard J, Rosie Rose, Sam B, Sauron for Life, Seju, TJT, and Tour Son of Hoor. Thank you so much for all of your support, and to everybody who supports the show, all 180 of you. Wow. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it. Also, we have some new reviews that came in this last week. If you'd like to get your words on the show, leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I'll read it out on a future episode. This one comes from Bia Gerbaba. I don't know how to say that, from the Netherlands, who says, perfect storytelling. This is the first time I'm reviewing a podcast. I just bought the Silmarillion and started listening to your podcast to get to know the lore better before the read. This podcast tells all the stories so beautifully and interestingly that I can't stop listening. I also love your interpretations and comments on the characters and events. Keep going. Thank you so much. I'm not going to try and pronounce the username again, but thank you so much for that. And then this one from Tom Bombadil, one in the United States, Tom Bombadil himself, my namesake. I'm not actually named after Tom Bombadil, but it's fun to pretend. Tolkien would approve. This is the best podcast ever. Robots does an excellent job making sense of the Silmarillion and how the unfinished. Oh, and now the unfinished tales. I love how Robots poses questions for the listeners and references to The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings books, showing the listeners the connections. This podcast is a relaxing, fun, and engaging. A must for any LOTR fans. Keep up the great work, Tom. Well, thanks, Tom Bombadil. Also, nice to meet you. Can you explain to us who you actually are? That would be wonderful. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening through all the mid-break stuff. And tell you what, let's just get on with the rest of the story. Here we go. So Aldarion returns after years, years and years of being gone. People weren't sure if he was alive, if he was ever going to return. So how do you think his father responds? Well, it says, greatly was Meneldur comforted at Aldarion's return, but he rebuked him for his rebellion against king and father, thus forsaking the guardianship of the Valar and risking the wrath of Ose, not only for himself, but for men whom he had bound to himself in devotion. The king basically confirms the hardships that you had at sea are because you forsake what you are supposed to do, and Ose is not happy with you. Basically, he's like, I warned you, buddy. Hey, I'm the king. I've been doing this a long time. I understand our relationship with the Valar, with the Maiar, with the sea itself. And you're not doing what you're supposed to do. That's why this is happening. How does Aldarion respond? Well, it says he was chastened in mood, and he received the pardon of Meneldur. His father decides to restore his title as Lord of the Ships in the Havens, and he even adds to it the title of Master of the Forests. We get the sense here that there is a real turn that happens in Aldarion after all of this. It's like the light bulb finally went on, and he finally started listening to his father, and he repents. This is a story of repentance, of a son coming back to the father. It's kind of like a prodigal son type of story. It's also similar to Aule and Iluvatar when he decides to make the dwarves, and Iluvatar's like, hold on, wait a minute. This is not the order things are supposed to go in. And Aule repents. We have a similar situation here. Now, Aldarion was grieved to find Arrendis gone from Armenelos. He returns back and she's nowhere to be found. She's left. And you would have to think, out at sea, all of those hardships, lightning blowing apart part of your ship, you want to return to a place of comfort. And you're probably hoping, after a decade plus of being out on the ocean, all of these other places, that the one woman who caught your eye might be waiting for you. But she's not. She was gone from Armenelos, and it continues and says, but he was too proud to seek her, and indeed he could not well do so save to ask for her in marriage, and he was still unwilling to be bound. So for as much as he wanted to see her again, he knew that the only reason he should seek her out would be to ask for her hand. Otherwise, it would be like he was teasing her again. So he decides to put himself to work and focus on other things. He works on repairing all of the stuff that went in decline since he was no longer there. It tells us he set himself to the repairing of the neglects of his long absence, for he had been nigh on 20 years away, and at the time great harbor works were put in hand, especially in Romena. He found that there had been much felling of trees for building and for making of many things, but all was done without foresight, and little had been planted to replace what was taken. And he journeyed far and wide in Numenor to view the standing woods. He was now Lord of the Forest, Master of the Forests, so he needed to go make sure that they were being managed correctly. They live on an island. There's only so much woodland where they live. So if they're going to be felling trees in order to get lumber to build buildings, even if it's not focused on ships, which he loves right now, then they need to be replanting the trees that they're taking. It's just part of the process, and they haven't been doing that. So he sets off across the island to survey the forests. And then we're told that one day in the forests of the Westlands, he saw a woman whose dark hair flowed in the wind, and about her was a green cloak clasped at the throat with a bright jewel. And he took her for one of the Eldar, who came at times to those parts of the island. He's out in the forests in a situation kind of similar to Thingol and Melian, and he finds a beautiful woman riding with a bright gem. And at a distance, she's so striking to him that he thinks she might be an elf. But as she approached, and he knew her for Arrendis, and saw that the jewel was the one that he had given her, then suddenly he knew in himself the love that he bore her, and he felt the emptiness of his days. This is the moment it took for Aldarion to see this beautiful woman who he hadn't seen in 20 years. And it clicked. Why does he find her so attractive? It's because he's been pushing away that love, the affection that he feels for her in his heart. that when he finally sees her again, she appears more beautiful than he remembered. And then he's reminded that his days have been empty without somebody to share them with. Arendis sees him and turns pale. And she's about to ride off, but he was quick, and he says, "Too well have I deserved that you should flee from me." I get this picture of her seeing him and kind of stammering and going, "Oh," and then looking to ride away. And then he yells after her at a distance where she just can hear him and says, "You're right. You probably should back away. I get it." And the full response is, "Too well have I deserved that you should flee from me, who have fled so often and so far. I get it. I'm the one who keeps fleeing you. So you fleeing me makes sense. I understand." But then he follows it up and says, "But forgive me and stay now." They rode then together to the house of Beragar, her father. Remember, they got along really well. And there Aldarion made plain his desire for betrothal to Arendis. But now Arendis was reluctant, though according to custom and the life of her people, it was now full time for her marriage. She was of age. It was expected that she would settle down. Her love for him was not lessened, nor did she retreat out of guile, but she feared now in her heart that in the war between herself and the sea for the keeping of Aldarion, she would not conquer. Never would Arendis take less, that she might not lose all. And fearing the sea, and begrudging to all ships the felling of trees which she loved, she determined that she must utterly defeat the sea and the ships, or else be herself defeated utterly. Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.